Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
91.3 and welcome back. In South Africa, fairness in higher education funding does not require an overhaul of the funding model to eliminate student fees, as many students and their supporters insist. Instead, it requires progressive reform of the current payment system. At least the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, or NSFAS for short, must increase the size of its loans, broaden its coverage, and raise the threshold earnings level at which repayment kicks in. Online, to tell us more about this, and the introduction, in fact, was written in an article by George Hull, who's a lecturer in philosophy at UCT. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Shafiq. It's great to be with you.
Now, you've written some very interesting stuff about free education in our lifetime. And I picked up something I'd like you to comment on. You said, in essence, if I've read it correctly, that free education in itself could even become a form of exploitation. What did you mean by that?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think that where there's agreement in this debate is what's really important is to achieve equal access to education. So that young people who are equally talented, equally dedicated, should be equally able to go to university. And the important point is that free education, which means fully state-funded, taxpayer-funded education, it's not the only way to achieve that. And, you know, I go further, as you say, and say it's actually not the fairest way to achieve that. So the reason why it's not fair, why it's a form of exploitation, well, basically, when you buy somebody a university education, you're essentially buying two things. You're first of all buying something which helps all of us. You're training somebody to be, you know, a skilled professional, an architect or a banker or whatever, maybe an innovator or a critically minded voter, maybe an artist or a future leader. That's something which benefits the whole of society, so it's a public good. And it's fine for the taxpayer to fund that because it benefits everybody. On the other hand, you're also buying a private or individual benefit for the student in question. Because first of all, they get the intrinsic benefits of university education. I hope there are some. But secondly, of course, you're giving them a tremendous leg up in the competition for jobs once they leave university. And I can put a number to that because studies show that if you've got a university degree, you're going to earn 240% of what you would earn without a university degree if you just had matric. And that goes across the board, whatever the other predictors, such as your parents earning or your gender or where you come from, your language or even your racial group. So it gives you a considerable benefit. Now, it would be fine for the public, the taxpayer to fund that if everybody was getting a university education. But at the moment in South Africa, it's less than 15% of those over 20 who have a degree. And even in countries which are much, much richer than South Africa, you're usually looking at 30 to 40% of the population getting a degree. So nothing like over 50% or everybody getting a degree. So my question really is it fair for everybody, even the poorest and the unemployed, who of course also pay taxes, VAT and other consumption taxes, is it fair for everybody to pay for an enhancement which gives one or two out of every 10 members of the population a huge competitive advantage in competition for jobs? I think the answer to that is no, and that's why I think that free higher education can become a form of exploitation when not just the public good element but also the individual benefit is funded by everybody who pays tax.
In fact, I mean, I think the key word, and you mentioned it already, is equal access. I think that's are two key words. Yep. And, of course, you're saying that the payment system must be reformed. I see that you've sort of put forward a benchmark of 50-50. In other words, 50% of a student's fees are subsidized by a bursary, and that 50% they have to pay themselves. Am I correct then if I assume that as just one of the benchmarks you've suggested?
Well, it's not so much a bursary, but I mean, at the moment, the majority of any student's university costs are already paid by partly by the government, which funds about 40% or a bit less now of tuition, and then partly by third streams such as corporations. So I think that's fine. It should continue. Perhaps students should pay a little bit more. My main point about the payment system was that it's a question of when the student pays and how the student pays. Because there can be, you highlighted equal access. I'm completely in agreement with you there. And we have to acknowledge that there can be financial barriers to equal access. At the moment, there are. because even when people get a National Student Financial Aid Scheme loan, sometimes it doesn't cover all the fees. Or even if it covers the fees, it doesn't cover accommodation and food, and so the student can be stuck. And we know that some people don't go to university because they can't afford to. So does that mean that we need free education? I don't think so. I mean, there's another model which is already embodied in NSFAS to some extent, and that is the buy now, pay later model, which we're familiar from other areas of life. And that's to say that students should be able to access education by means of a government loan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, NSFAS already does that. The problem with NSFAS loans is they don't cover enough people, as you mentioned at the beginning. They're too small. Also, the threshold level for when you have to repay a NSFAS loan is too small. It's currently, I think, still 30,000 rands per year. Once you're earning that, you start repaying your loan. Well, it's too small a salary to be repaying a loan on. But the important thing to realize is that, you know, the buy now, pay later model, it can achieve equal access without unfairness in who pays for higher education. Students should contribute, you know, that proportion of higher education, which is giving them a leg up over everybody else, but they should do that once they're reaping the benefits of higher education through their higher earnings. And you do that through what's called income contingent repayment of a loan, which means that if you are not earning a high salary, if you're earning a very low salary and you never earn a high salary, you're not going to pay any of your loan back, and you will pay at a rate not determined by the interest rate or the size of the loan, but rather determined by what your earnings are that year. So it's basically a loan which is guaranteed to be manageable.
In fact, I mean, I think everybody listening to us is very happy with the last statement you've made, that the repayment of these loans must not be attached to interest rates, because it's interest rates that kill most citizens in any kind of loan scenario anyway. And the model that you're putting forward, where it's staggered according to what you're earning, to me seems to be a far fairer way of, in fact, paying back your loan, because it's done in manageable proportions. And so when a person starts working, as some people do after their degrees, they're not totally overwhelmed and drowning in debt from day one, which is not a nice way to start your life.
Well, that's quite right. And, you know, the thing is that people and families are already taking out loans to pay for university education. There's what's called the missing middle, which is families which are earning between 120,000 rand, which is the cut-off point for NSFAS, and about 500,000 rand per year. And for them, it's a struggle. It's difficult to put somebody through university. And they often cover the gap by taking out a loan from their bank. The problem with that is if suddenly one of the earners is not earning any more, well, they've still got to pay the same interest rate. And they may have, the security on the loan may be their house, so there's a possibility of them losing their house. Now, what I think is the crucial thing here is that the government, which is the most creditworthy institution in society, should use its power to borrow money cheaply in order to turn those people's bad debt into good. Because it's important to remember that a lot of debt can be very good. It enables us to do things, you know, before we've saved all the money to do it. That isn't just a bad thing. And so, you know, this income contingent model is good debt, because it's debt which is guaranteed to have a, you know, a manageable repayment structure. You're not going to lose your house. You're not going to be saddled with an unmanageable interest payment every month.
It's interesting you're talking in these terms, because it's quite curiously, before the proverbial hit the fan in terms of fees must fall, we spoke to the rector of the University of Johannesburg, Adam Habib, and he was saying he felt that the banks needed to come on board and government needed to come on board to have kind of like a central fund, which basically covers exactly what we are discussing right now. And he was at great pains to point out that the students mustn't be tied to interest, and he felt that the corporate sector should actually play a role in this. I mean, what's your feeling on that, that the corporate sector should play a role?
Well, the corporate sector already contributes to some extent, though it tends to be rather piecemeal and determined by things like, you know, which university the director of a company is the alumnus of, for example. And so, yes, I think there's potential to rationalize and improve the way that corporations make a contribution. And one way which appeals to me is the following. If the government were to issue specially designated student financial aid scheme government bonds, then in order to finance an expansion of the loan system, then those could be quite attractive investments to a lot of corporations who always want to be seen to be doing corporate social responsibility. You know, if you're buying earmarked bonds to achieve access to higher education for students who otherwise wouldn't be able to. So I think that there are certainly ways for corporations to make a contribution to higher education in a way which is more efficient than the way they do at the moment.
George, do you think that government really needs to start thinking out of the government box in terms of what we're discussing? Because the more we talk about this on air, the more there seems to be out-of-the-box solutions to our education crisis, that it is imminently solvable, that it's not something that's looming over us like a tsunami and there's nothing we can do about it.
I think it is eminently solvable, and I think it's important for us to think outside the South Africa box, in fact, because, you know, this country can learn a lot from international experience, both in other African countries and further afield, because, you know, other African countries such as Uganda, Kenya, and some others, they did experiment with free higher education for a while, but, you know, they landed in a lot of trouble. They found that wasn't a feasible way to fund university education, especially because, you know, a country which is developing, and especially when it's developing away from a situation of terrible injustice like South Africa, it has to prioritize basic education and secondary education to get its citizens' skills up to an equal level. And if it's paying a lot for higher education for, you know, usually the privileged middle class, that's a drain on resources it can spend elsewhere. Now, the model which I've described, you know, expanding this fast using these loans with income contingent repayment, it's been tried out in countries like New Zealand and Australia, also the United Kingdom to some extent, and, you know, they found and they've ironed out problems in the system which South Africa can learn from. And just to name one, at the moment, NISFAS loans, they're not only they have income contingent repayment, but also the interest rate is at 80% of the repo rate, so it's a heavily subsidized interest rate. That means that the loan system is not actually recovering full costs. Now, because it doesn't actually help students, it just gives graduates who are already earning an extravagant free gift, because the rate at which the loans are repaid is not determined by interest rate, but rather by income. So one thing which South Africa could learn from international experience is to raise that interest rate to above the repo rate, thus making the loan scheme self-financing, but maintaining income contingent repayment so that that doesn't affect the manageability of repaying a student loan.
George Hull, lecturer in philosophy at UCT, talking about alternative funding models for, especially for tertiary education. They are out there. They do exist. It's time for government and maybe civil society to push government into thinking along those lines. George Hull, it's been a pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you for having me, Shafiq.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.